Chapter 41. Willems turned a little from her and spoke lower. "Look at that," he said, with an almost imperceptible movement of his head towards the woman to whom he was presenting his shoulder. "Look at that. Don't believe her. What has she been saying to you?"
"What?"
"I have been asleep. Had to sleep at last. I've been waiting for you 3 days and nights. I had to sleep some time. Hadn't I? I told her to remain awake and watch for you and call me at once. She did watch. You can't believe her. You can't believe any woman. Who can tell what's inside their heads? No one. You can know nothing. The only thing you can know is that it isn't anything like what comes through their lips. They live by the side of you. They seem to hate you, or they seem to love you. They caress or torment you. They throw you over or stick to you closer than your skin for some inscrutable and awful reason of their own which you can never know. Look at her, and look at me. At me. Her infernal work. What has she been saying?" His voice had sunk to a whisper. Lingard listened with great attention, holding his chin in his hand, which grasped a great handful of his white beard. His elbow was in the palm of his other hand, and his eyes were still fixed on the ground. He murmured, "Without looking up, she begged me for your life, if you want to know, as if the thing were worth giving or taking." "And for 3 days she begged me to take yours," said Willems quickly. "Or 3 days she wouldn't give me any peace. She was never still. She planned ambushes. She has been looking for places all over here where I could hide and drop you with a safe shot as you walked up. It's true. I give you my word." "Your word," muttered Lingard, contemptuously. Willems took no notice. "Ah. She is a ferocious creature," he went on. "You don't know. I wanted to pass the time, to do something, to have something to think about, to forget my troubles till you came back. And... look at her. She took me, as if I did not belong to myself. She did. I did not know there was something in me she could get hold of. She, a savage. I, a civilized European, and clever. She that knew, no more than a wild animal. Well, she found out something in me. She found it out, and I was lost. I knew it. She tormented me. I was ready to do anything. I resisted, but I was ready. I knew that too. That frightened me more than anything, more than my own sufferings. And that was frightful enough, I assure you." Lingard listened, fascinated, and amazed like a child listening to a fairy tale, and, when Willem stopped for breath, he shuffled his feet a little. "What does he say?" cried out Asa, suddenly. The two men looked at her quickly, and then looked at one another. Willems began again, speaking hurriedly, "I tried to do something. Take her away from those people. I went to Almayer, the biggest blind fool that you ever. Then Abdullah came, and she went away. She took away with her something of me which I had to get back. I had to do it. As far as you are concerned, the change here had to happen sooner or later. You couldn't be master here forever. It isn't what I have done that torments me. It is the why. It's the madness that drove me to it. It's that thing that came over me. That may come again, someday. It will do no harm to anybody then, I promise you," said Lingard, significantly. Willems looked at him for a second with a blank stare, then went on, "I fought against her. She goaded me to violence and to murder. Nobody knows why. She pushed me to it persistently, desperately, all the time. Fortunately Abdullah had sense. I don't know what I wouldn't have done. She held me then. Held me like a nightmare, that is terrible and sweet. By and by it was another life. I woke up. I found myself beside an animal as full of harm as a wild cat. You don't know through what I have passed. Her father tried to kill me, and she very nearly killed him. I believe she would have stuck at nothing. I don't know which was more terrible. She would have stuck at nothing to defend her own. And when I think that it was Mimi Willems. I hate her. Tomorrow she may want my life. How can I know what's in her? She may want to kill me next. He paused in great trepidation, then added in a scared tone, I don't want to die here. Don't you? Said Lingard, thoughtfully. Willems turned towards Asa and pointed at her with a bony forefinger. Look at her. Always there. Always near. Always watching, watching. Dot dot for something. Look at her eyes. Ain't they big? Don't they stare? You wouldn't think she can shut them like human beings do. I don't believe she ever does. I go to sleep, if I can, under their stare, and when I wake up I see them fixed on me, and moving no more than the eyes of a corpse. While I am still they are still. By God she can't move them till I stir, and then they follow me like a pair of jailers. They watch me, when I stop they seem to wait patient, and glistening till I am off my guard for to do something. To do something horrible. Look at them. You can see nothing in them. They are big, menacing and empty. The eyes of a savage, of a damned mongrel, half Arab, half Malay. They hurt me. I am white. I swear to you, I can't stand this. Take me away. I am white. All white. He shouted towards the somber heaven, proclaiming desperately under the frown of thickening clouds the fact of his pure and superior descent. He shouted, his head thrown up, his arms swinging about wildly, lean, ragged, disfigured. A tall madman making a great disturbance about something invisible. A being absurd, repulsive, pathetic, and droll. Lingard, who was looking down, as if absorbed in deep thought, gave him a quick glance from under his eyebrows. Asa stood with clasped hands. At the other end of the courtyard the old woman, like a vague and decrepit apparition, rose noiselessly to look, then sank down again with a stealthy movement, and crouched low over the small glow of the fire. Willem's voice filled the enclosure, rising louder with every word, and then, suddenly, at its very loudest, stopped short like water stops running from an overturned vessel. As soon as it had ceased the thunder seemed to take up the burden in a low growl coming from the inland hills. The noise approached in confused mutterings which kept on increasing, swelling into a roar that came nearer, rushed down the river, passed close in a tearing crash and instantly sounded faint, dying away in monotonous and dull repetitions amongst the endless sinuosities of the lower reaches. Over the great forests, over all the innumerable people of unstirring trees, over all that living people immense, motionless, and mute, the silence that had rushed in on the track of the passing tumult remained suspended as deep and complete as if it had never been disturbed from the beginning of remote ages. Then, through it, after a time, came to Lingard's ears the voice of the running river. A voice low, discreet, and sad, like the persistent and gentle voices that speak of the past in the silence of dreams. He felt a great emptiness in his heart. It seemed to him that there was within his breast a great space without any light, where his thoughts wandered forlornly, unable to escape, unable to rest, unable to die, to vanish and to relieve him from the fearful oppression of their existence. Speech, action, anger, forgiveness, all appeared to him alike useless and vain, appeared to him unsatisfactory, not worth the effort of hand or brain that was needed to give them effect. He could not see why he should not remain standing there, without ever doing anything, to the end of time. He felt something, something like a heavy chain, that held him there. This wouldn't do. He backed away a little from Willems and Asa, leaving them close together, then stopped and looked at both. The man and the woman appeared to him much further than they really were. He had made only about 3 steps backward, but he believed for a moment that another step would take him out of earshot forever. They appeared to him slightly under life size, and with a great cleanness of outlines, like figures carved with great precision of detail, and highly finished by a skillful hand. He pulled himself together. The strong consciousness of his own personality came back to him. He had a notion of surveying them from a great and inaccessible height. He said slowly, "You have been possessed of a devil. Yes, answered Willems gloomily, and looking at Asa. SN'T it pretty? I've heard this kind of talk before, said Lingard, in a scornful tone, then paused, and went on steadily after a while. I regret nothing. I picked you up by the waterside, like a starving cat by God. I regret nothing, nothing that I have done. Abdullah 20 others, no doubt Hudig himself, were after me. That's business for them. But that you should. Money belongs to him who picks it up, and is strong enough to keep it, but this thing was different. It was part of my life. I am an old fool. He was. The breath of his words, of the very words he spoke, fanned the spark of divine folly in his breast, the spark that made him the hard-headed, heavy-handed adventurer stand out from the crowd, from the sordid, from the joyous, unscrupulous, a noisy crowd of men that were so much like himself. Willem said hurriedly, colon, it wasn't me. The evil was not in me, Captain Lingard. And where else confound you? Where else? Interrupted Lingard, raising his voice. Did you ever see me cheat and lie and steal? Tell me that. Did you? Hey? I wonder where in perdition you came from when I found you under my feet. No matter. You will do no more harm. Willems moved nearer, gazing upon him anxiously. Lingard went on with distinct deliberation, what did you expect when you asked me to see you? What? You know me. I am Lingard. You lived with me. You've heard men speak. You knew what you had done. Well, what did you expect? How can I know? Groaned Willems, wringing his hands. I was alone in that infernal savage crowd. I was delivered into their hands. After the thing was done, I felt so lost and weak that I would have called the devil himself to my aid if it had been any good, if he hadn't put in all his work already. In the whole world there was only one man that had ever cared for me. Only one white man. You. Hate is better than being alone. Death is better. I expected. Anything. Something to expect. Something to take me out of this. Out of her sight. He laughed. His laugh seemed to be torn out from him against his will, seemed to be brought violently on the surface from under his bitterness, his self-contempt, from under his despairing wonder at his own nature. When I think that, when I first knew her, it seemed to me that my whole life wouldn't be enough to. And now, when I look at her, she did it all. I must have been mad. I was mad. Every time I look at her, I remember my madness. It frightens me. And when I think that of all my life, of all my past, of all my future, of my intelligence, of my work, there is nothing left but she, the cause of my ruin, and you whom I have mortally offended. He hid his face for a moment in his hands, and when he took them away he had lost the appearance of comparative calm, and gave way to a wild distress. Captain Lingard. Anything. A deserted island. Anywhere. I promise. Shut up. Shouted Lingard, roughly. He became dumb, suddenly, completely. The wan light of the clouded morning retired slowly from the courtyard, from the clearings, from the river, as if it had gone unwillingly, to hide in the enigmatical solitudes of the gloomy and silent forests. The clouds over their heads thickened into a low vault of uniform blackness. The air was still and inexpressibly oppressive. Lingard unbuttoned his jacket, flung it wide open, and, inclining his body sideways a little, wiped his forehead with his hand, which he jerked sharply afterwards. Then he looked at Willems, and said, "No promise of yours is any good to me. I am going to take your conduct into my own hands. Pay attention to what I am going to say. You are my prisoner." Willem's head moved imperceptibly. Then he became rigid and still. He seemed not to breathe. "You shall stay here," continued Lingard, with somber deliberation. "Who are not fit to go amongst people? Who could suspect, who could guess, who could imagine what's in you? I couldn't. You are my mistake. I shall hide you here. If I let you out, you would go amongst unsuspecting men, and lie, and steal, and cheat for a little money or for some woman. I don't care about shooting you. It would be the safest way, though. But I won't. Do not expect me to forgive you. To forgive one must have been angry and become contemptuous, and there is nothing in me now, no anger, no contempt, no disappointment. To me you are not Willems, the man I befriended and helped through thick and thin, and thought much of. You are not a human being that may be destroyed or forgiven. You are a bitter thought, a something without a body and that must be hidden. You are my shame. He ceased and looked slowly round. How dark it was. It seemed to him that the light was dying prematurely out of the world, and that the air was already dead. Of course, he went on, I shall see to it that you don't starve. You don't mean to say that I must live here, Captain Lingard? Said Willems, in a kind of mechanical voice without any inflections. Did you ever hear me say something I did not mean? Asked Lingard. Who said you didn't want to die here? Well, you must live. Unless you change your mind, he added, as if an involuntary afterthought. He looked at Willems narrowly, then shook his head. You are alone, he went on. Odin can help you. Nobody will. You are neither white nor brown. You have no color as you have no heart. Your accomplices have abandoned you to me, because I am still somebody to be reckoned with. You are alone, but for that woman there. You say you did this for her. Well, you have her. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.